Hello, it's Thursday, the 31st of October in the year of our Lord, 2024. We're back with episode three of our election week special, talking to our friends from across the pond. Delighted that this lovely lady, who's been so supportive of all of our podcast-a-thons, and
Ten
she's
for
been a
me this
previous
morning.
guest,
Sorry.
she is the wonderful host of the Trend On show. Tamara Lee, hello.
Hello. Wonderful to be back with you.
Thank you so much for coming back. Now, we're talking about the biggest election probably in American history. I mean, if it goes the wrong way, you're looking at communism. You're looking at it's going to affect the whole entire world. What are you seeing? What are your thoughts on this election? Is election day going to go ahead? And
This
just,
is
yeah, what
my
let's discuss.
okay. Off the bat, and thank you for having me back on. It's crazy we've been at this for almost a decade, right? Who would have ever thought back when we all first engaged in the 2015, which I was in
Yeah.
for Trump right away. In the primaries, like I just loved that he was outside the political world, that he was a candidate that I feel the founders intended to be non-career politicians. You serve your country because you're a stakeholder and from the lay population, not career politicians. And so I was behind him right away and, worked really hard and knocked it out 24/7 and the And then it went from bad to worse to horrible. And here we are, looking at the same thing. My gut instinct, and I'll put this out for your audience, based on no confirmed insider information whatsoever. This is my gut. Having watched each of the elections from 2016, 2018, 2020, 2022, and now here we are at 2024, and being engaged at a higher level probably than most Americans at the national level. My gut instinct is that each of the elections over the past 10 years since 2016, that Trump and his team, whether it's the White Hats with the military, whether it's just Trump and his He's a regular, there's no outside military operation, right? So if you even if you take it out of that school of thinking that exists in our engaged politics these days, in America, or that there is an operation at hand. Either way, I think in 2016, Trump's team was so strategic in getting the electoral victory for in the electoral college, and it caught Clinton, it caught the Democrats, it caught the Rhino establishment off guard that Trump was so dialed in. I think they discredited him as a serious candidate, and he used that to his advantage that they weren't taking him seriously when he was laser precise in the calculations needed to win that election. So they were caught off guard and then they recovered. And by 2018, they were at least aware of how to counter any kind of gains made by Trump and his campaign and the MAGA movement. And having been involved in 2016 in what was kind of quotation marks, tweeters for Trump, to the point of that we had learned how to engage on Twitter at the time, the platform that I think totally caught the left off guard because the social media and technology was supposed to be the realm of the left and Obama and using it effectively in 2008 and 2012. And so they just, I think they're biased. Blinded them to think that, oh, MAGA conservative Trump supporters could engage with technology to the point of where we were so strategic utilizing Twitter and DM rooms and messaging and trending hashtags. And I was part of this group at the national level.
Sorry to interrupt, love. I should have said this at the beginning. Just for the listeners, because you were politically, you were very, very involved. Just let the listeners know a little bit how you were involved and what you were doing, just to get to know you. I should have started that off.
So just real quick background. I had launched a podcast, Tamralee's Trend On, back in 2012 with a group out of Chicago, Link Local Network, which is where I met Bren Hamacek, who later became my co-host, who you know, and has been a guest on your show, I believe. And so but it had nothing to do with politics. His show was a business show. Mine was just a kind of, I named it Trend On so I could really talk about whatever I wanted, because the group out of Chicago is wanting to get ahead. If we jump in our time, you know, back to the future, back in 2011, 2012, streaming was a new phenomenon. Podcasting was a new phenomenon. Now I'm getting caught on my words. Anyway, so this group.
I know what you mean. Phenomenon.
Yeah, there you go. Wanted to get ahead of streaming and just content and social media and all that was relatively like the Wild West, New Frontier. So we both ended up doing that. And then Brent connected with Charlie Kirk and was, you know, involved in Turning Point USA's formation. And because of our connection at the Link Local Network and became good friends through it, I followed what was going on with that. And then in 2015, someone had a group had approached me about doing a political podcast, and I thought, well, I better start paying closer attention. And so I just dove in and ended up, you know, my podcast being able to just talk to incredible people. And it really was very, I think, a God thing of directing and putting me in places where I needed to be in my background. And like when Trump said, drain the swamp, I wholeheartedly believe the swamp is in our backyard because I've lived it, and they swim upstream to Washington. So because I had the podcast and the platform and then got involved and then ended up in these tweeters for Trump and these DM groups and then politicoded articles and just really very much God's moving and directing, I feel like, opportunities that came my way. And then I ended up connecting with, in 2016, I was so mad at Paul Ryan that he was going to throw the state of Wisconsin for Trump because he's such a rhino, never Trumper. I got involved in a campaign here with a failed candidate, Paul Nealon, to run against Paul Ryan. But the good thing was that he at least gave some competition to Ryan. And I connected with Derek Hankerson, and that led one thing to the other, connected with Pasquale Scopolitti, who was a great analyst who was working with General Flynn on the engagement of the veteran community back in 2015, 2016. And Pasquale and I connected and ended up, once General Flynn was charged, I had the social media platform, Pasquale had the analysis and strategy. And so together we co-created the Pardon Flynn Now campaign, social media movement that resulted in General Flynn's pardon of innocence. And I created the concept at the federal level of the pardon of innocence. Pasquale and I, when you have corrupt courts that are not going to self-correct. And so then we just saw increased weaponization of the judicial system leading up to and after January 6th. And then David Summerall we connected along the way, and he and I worked. And I wrote articles with David on StopHate.com on the January 6ers. And now, because of that work with the Pardon Flynn Now movement, Pardon of Innocence, I've worked with Suzanne Monk on the J6 Pardon Project for the January 6ers. So that day one, President Trump has a complete document of all the J6ers who need the Pardon of Innocence, Pardon of Mercy, so that they can be released from their confinement anyway until it gets sorted through from their weaponized judicial system of political hostages, persecution, prosecution. So that's all kind of running parallel to the podcast and other things that I do. So yeah, and then with Brent as my co-host, we went to video probably sometime 2018, 2019, Brent Hamachek. And then I connected with Dr. Zelenko, had him on the show, Brent and Dr. Zelenko, then ended up writing the book before he died. Pasquale passed away. It's coming up on 2 years now, which is hard to believe, but just an incredible analyst and brilliant political mind. So that's the backstory of where my perspective.
So going back to my question, do you think the election will go ahead?
Well, if we do a weave like Trump does, where he talks about other things and then comes back to the starting point of where he was at. So what my gut instinct is that in 2016, Trump's team very dialed in on strategically winning that. And there's examples I can point to that support that, of like being at CPAC in 2016 in, you know, DC, and Trump was supposed to be a keynote speaker Saturday. And that was still in the primary. There was still, you know, Cruz was still in. Ben Carson had just announced he was dropping out. And Trump went to Iowa ahead of the Iowa caucuses. So things like that. So I believe that caught him off guard, 2016. 2018, they were a little bit on their heels that they needed to pay better attention. I think Trump at a press conference said, you know, it was important to win. And I can't remember if it was the Senate or the House, but Trump was happy. We lost one, gave up one maybe to gain the other. And then in 2020 with the steal, I feel like all of these and all the data from 2020 that has come out about the different ways that they stole, you know, I think David did a little clip on how to steal an election, or somebody did, of like, you know, do this, don't do that, do this from the ballot boxes. And we have all the different experts who have come out since then of whether it's Yovan Pulitzer with the paper ballots and the watermarks, or Seth Keschel and the data and the ghost, you know, the statistics of how they inflated voter rolls, Dr. Frank about the voter rolls and pulling them back after the election, Tina Peters taking the screenshots of the machines. What's the one on the Dominion? I'm drawing a blank on his name, out of Colorado.
The
Dominion guy. Who was on that call with Antifa, where the head of Dominion said, you know, no bleeping way Trump's going to win, because they're going to make sure of it with the machines. All of these things, to Dinesh D'Souza and his 2,000 meals, all the different ways in 2020 that they were able to identify how the cheat is, and not just identify it, know it, but expose it. But
so the guys, one of the guys behind the Dominion machines is a Lord Malik Brown. And Lord Malik Brown is also CEO of the Open Society, Soros's Open Society. I know his son's taken the lead, but Malik Brown's totally involved. He was also involved in a project called the Oceanic Project. And Boris Johnson's sort of like bit on the side, who's now his wife, Carrie Simmons, she worked alongside Malik Brown on the Oceanic Project, and the Oceanic Project was linked to Ghislaine Maxwell's Tarahumara Project.
Oh, it's all so interconnected. I mean,
all of it. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. So I feel like that information had to be shown to the public, right? And January 6th was really about the election steal, the first people to go, so that went to redress our government. So the election wouldn't be certified, because there were problems throughout the country on the election results. So then you had the orchestrated chaos, disrupt the process. The evidence isn't entered into the congressional record. Late at night, in the dark of night, after everybody's gone home, they certify the election and install Biden administration. And my gut is that all of these things were allowed to take place. And all of it's been exposed and tracked. Yep. And that now I feel in 2024, all the traps have been set and they're ready to spring. And so they will cheat. They will pull shenanigans. I mean, they shut down the whole world for the sake of being able to, with COVID.
Exactly.
Kill people for that objective. And And I feel like now for the world to see the traps have been set and the spring is going to snap down and they won't be allowed to steal the election and get away with it. And Trump has posted out things on Truth Social of, you know, prosecutions of, you know, there's, you know, heard Pennsylvania had fraudulent ballots, you know, the swift,
yeah,
with legal action or prosecution. So he's floating out those. And I take my cues from Trump. I watch what he and his campaign are doing. And that's both a positive and, if I guess you could say, a negative, in that you watch what he's saying, like justice this time, or they're not going to get away with it, or we have it all. Those are things that are in place. And then you, the other side of it is you watch his demeanor, like last night at his rally in Green Bay, where he did the entire event in the little garbage, you know, vest.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Trolling, you know, the master trolling. And you watch his demeanor. He's calm, cool, and collected. He's relaxed. I don't think he's worried about it being stolen. I think there's a sense of all things are in hand and under control. And if he says we have it all, I believe it. So that's where my thinking is. Now, what happens after the election? Well, and he even said, and Elon Musk has floated that out too, of we'll know ahead of November 5th what the results are. So there won't have to be, you know, it's math. I remember having a German TA in college in a statistics class, and I was arguing with about my grade with him, and he's like, it's maths, you know, in plural, like you say in Europe, it's math. It either adds up to this or it doesn't add up to that. And
yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, they have all the capability with the technology to triangulate algorithms to know exactly how many voters in a precinct, who's, you know, you can cross-check that with Social Security, driver records, everything. It's not an X factor of no one can know exactly how many votes and voters are in a given precinct. It's math. Yeah, so
exactly.
I feel like by Tuesday, they will have the math in place that if, say, 80% of the precinct has reported in and Trump is, you know, got a significant victory, and no matter how that 20% remaining vote is divided between the candidates, Trump's victory is secured. So I feel like they've got it all figured out down to the vote and the math. That's my gut.
You saying about how you watch him, it's also that the other people that, you know, who have on stage. Now, I know there's been uproar about from that because of Tony Hinchcliffe from the Kill Tony show, saying about, is it Puerto Rico or Cuba that they're saying? Was it Cuba? Was a floating, was garbage. There's a big floating island of garbage, and I think they call it Cuba.
Oh, Puerto
I think
Rico?
That's what, Puerto Rico, yes. Well, that's clever, because it's now people are going to go over and have a look at Puerto Rico, and they're going to see the issues that are going on over there. Do you know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah.
Yes, it was, you know, it was in this day, and, you know, he's a comedian.
Right.
You know, people are so, I was brought up sticks and stones, you know, and you banter, it's, you know, you banter. And he's telling, you know, but it's raising awareness now, hopefully, to Cuba. And yeah. I think the team that he's got around is brilliant. What's your thoughts on J.D. Vance? The more I listen to him, the more I'm actually liking him.
My jury is still out on J.D. Vance. He's articulate. He's well-spoken. He says he had a change of heart regarding Trump. I do not agree with you know, I listened to their verbiage around how they define J6, either defending it or throwing J6ers under the bus, and I'm not happy with what I heard of his way of talking about J6ers, because that was one of the things David and I worked on immediately after January 6, 2021. We said we can't let their verbiage stick. And so when they came out, you know, that day, Biden with insurrectionist, violent mob, David and I set out to make sure that we, you know, from writing history, the journalistic battle of January 6th, that we re made sure that the written history, WRITTEN, was righted, RIGHTED, in that the words matter. And anyone who came out after January 6th, like a Ted Cruz who said, oh, it was a violent mob, no, we don't forget that. You were.
So what was J.D. Vance's stand on it? What was Vance's stand on it then?
I think initially he was that the J6ers were a violent mob. And
I haven't heard his stance on it.
Yeah, I heard a clip recently that I was like, okay, that's the wrong language to be coming from him regarding January 6th. And somebody on his team should correct him with the proper answer that he needs to say whenever he's asked about January 6th, that he's got one that doesn't throw the January 6ers under the bus. So
agreed. Who would have been your, you know, if you could pick, who would have been Trump's running mate?
I didn't really have a horse that I had picked. My gut again was that it was not going to be a female. It was not going to be a minority. It would be somebody that Trump would feel very capable of handing over the reins to running the country, either should he step down or in the event of something happened, right? So in that regard, Vance would fit the bill, although he's young, but then he captures that younger demographic. However, I feel like last minute pick two, is he a handler like Bush was to Reagan, or was Pence a handler to Trump in the first time? Did he have to take Pence because the Uniparty forced it and he needed the RNC at the time to pull in the victory? So my jury is still out on Vance. And the fact that he had the Netflix hillbilly elegy that was, you know, Obama's.
You're agreed on.
It's just a little like, that's a little coincidental. Here he has this, you know, already packaged up past biography. Now I could be totally wrong in being skeptical about him, and he could be great, and he could have had a genuine change of heart. He's certainly well spoken, but I
had a bit of funny little vibes with the wife. Don't know what it was, but it was just something about maybe her, the way, you know, her body language and some of her facial expressions, you know, when she's been brought out on stage, and you can just, or when she's like even just in the background, you know, you can, I don't know, there's some things that makes me a bit twitchy, but, you know, I've watched some of his interviews. I like the way he's standing up to the mainstream media. He's got quite a stance on what kids should be talking, you know, what we, with the kids in schools, and the whole transgender thing. So that's, you know, I've seen a couple. I saw the one with Theo Vaughn, his interview.
Well, and
with
what did Tucker Carlson say? You know, trust your gut. When you have gut feelings about things, trust your gut.
Yeah.
So if you have a gut reaction to be skeptical, I think you trust your gut, that there's some reason why you're a bit skeptical. It doesn't mean you're not open to being wrong about it, or, you know, being able to move your opinion to a different position of not skeptical and being okay. But I think listening to that skepticism inside your head is a good thing.
After the assassination attempt, do you think he was, because there was I can't remember the name of the prophet. I know it was a Reawaken America tour, and they were in the canteen, and Amanda Grace was there, and he had, the Lord had given him a word, and he had a vision about exactly that.
Is it the,
you know, about what happened. And I think it was in the march he had that vision. I can't remember his name now.
Yeah, I saw one about it, and I don't
know. Yeah, and then he said that Trump would go down and be radically, radically come up back for Jesus. What are your thoughts?
Well, so my thought, and I'm a believer, and my thought a little bit with people being too quick to say, oh, we're in the end times. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could say, yes, we're in the end times. But again, is that predictive programming that we create the environment around because the idea has been put out there? And so we move towards that? Or my belief is that we don't know. And one, what does the end times look like? And God has shown many, many times in scripture of where he's had a change of heart and extended grace and mercy upon a people rather than punishment given the people's repentance and coming back to him. So I'm not one to say, oh, this is how it's going to go, because here we are in Revelations, because which is cause effect, sort of like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, I don't know. He seems to be talking a lot more about his faith, and I do believe he's God's David, you know, for this time. You know, I do. I follow Julie Green. I've had Deborah Williams on the show. I've had Julie Green on the show. Amanda Grace, Robin Bullock, and you know, they're spot on. They are spot on. You go back over, and obviously Kim Clement.
Yeah. And I was just at the Reawaken tour in North Carolina with the group, with the American Gulag Chronicles and 1A Film Fest. And I do think it's not just Trump, but within the movement, you know, whether it's Christian nationalists, there definitely is the returning to God and country and a moral society of realizing that abandoning our Judeo-Christian values has not served the country well. And then you have, I think, Laura and Eric Trump, Laura Trump being much more of a seemingly evangelical Christian, or at least more foundational in her beliefs. So that's bringing, you know, Eric. I think Trump is old school in terms of faith was more of a private experience, right? It guided and molded your character, and, you know, a man's handshake was his word and things like that, old school business principles or character moral things, but it was a not so public facing expression of faith. And then you saw the rise of the non-denominational evangelical Christian movement, the bigger churches, the mega churches, Willow Creek in Chicago, you know, the ones in Texas or California, wherever. You had much more of a evangelical rising up, Dr. Dobson, focus on the family, you know, venturing into. I just heard, I'll send you the link, excellent message, sermon on our role as Christians to engage in politics, that's biblical and founded in scripture, and what Christ calls us to do and be. And so I think with the more active outworking of a faith, more vocal about it from the younger generation, Charlie Kirk and his wife, you know, and then working with, whether it's Hillsdale or Liberty Colleges, the Christian colleges, I think it's just become a much more open conversation, where President Trump has found it, and Dr. Ben Carson certainly is vocal in his faith and everything. So I think he's found an environment within the political world that is also very much rooted and founded in that God, country, family, right?
Definitely. We're seeing revival. We really are, especially people coming from the New Age, coming over and seeing it, because really you start on the path for truth that only leads one way.
Right. And we see so much more blatant in front of us what evil truly is. I mean, when you have Paris at the Olympics or the Super Bowl, blatantly satanic evil, Taylor Swift concert, that the pop culture has been taken over by evil, pure evil. And so the contrast, I think, is just more clear, both culturally and politically.
So we've been doing a series on Diddy. We started when he, the Cassie lawsuit. Interesting, I did a show just before Cassie's lawsuit dropped with a DJ who has been to Bad Boy Records. There's pictures of him and Aaliyah and Beyonce. He's a UK DJ and he's in the, you know, he's a real truther, Mark Devlin. And we'd done a show about, you know, the, is it the Boule, the Black Illuminati? We did a series, then we started digging into the Cassie lawsuit. Then we found the video of a gentleman called Jonathan Oddie who went into the Trump Doral Hotel and started shooting it up.
Oh.
In 20, I think it was, it's either 2016 or 2018, I'm not sure. Jonathan Oddie. And he was thrown in prison, and police interviews are out there. And he was saying that he'd been held hostage by Diddy as a sex slave, and that they were trafficking kids, they were moving drugs around the country in the Ciroc vodka. They were money laundering, the whole lot. Exactly Cassie's story that she brought out in 23. Now, listen to this. That guy has not been in front of a judge yet. He's been sitting in Miami-Dade for 8 years.
Wow.
Because obviously he's you know, he's going to be one of the victims. But the satanic stuff, and I do believe we are watching the destruction of Hollywood right now. Like everything will come out.
100%.
And I do believe people are getting shocked by the horrors that are coming out of Diddy's parties. People have been calling for the Epstein files, you know, who was on the guest list, what was actually going on. Now, we, well, through research and articles and from the boards, like the Q boards, there was some horrific stuff. And we know about the organ harvesting. It's so
Oh, yeah.
horrific. And we
It's
know that Jeffrey Epstein was into eugenics, messing with the humans, with animals. Bill Gates was a regular there. It is so horrific, the public wouldn't be able to cope.
no, and well.
I do believe Diddy thing is getting, because people are like horrified of what's going on there. And I do believe when Trump comes in, they are going to be released. And it's up to us if you want to go and see it. But I do
Right.
believe that the whole Diddy stuff is kind of setting up for the other horrific stuff that's been going on.
One, and we've seen the
Satanic rituals at
progression of that as
CERN,
well.
human
Just like,
sacrificing.
yeah, all of it. Just like the reveals over the last 9 years of how our
Yeah.
politics was rigged and the elections and the corruption and how systematic and how big, you know, Trump said the swamp was bigger and deeper than even he imagined. And so we're seeing the reveal of that. I also think there's been more reveals, more revelations to the people, not by revelations in a God prophecy
No,
sense,
no.
more in a, you know, exposure to the general public to where the scales off their eyes are being peeled away so that they can see what they see and hear what they hear and understand. And most of them can't comprehend the depth of it. You and I and your audience, most likely, the more engaged people who have dug down those, you know, jumped all in down those rabbit holes and just learned things that we never wanted to. You can't unknow them once you know them, and you can't unsee them once you see them. We understand how it all plays into the whole structure, global structure, political, social, economic, all of that tied together. P. Diddy is not an isolated, it's not a vertical
No.
silo. It's a very intricate web of everything globally, of the evil that has just been unchecked for decades and decades, maybe centuries.
And we still seem to be. I mean, the idiot that we've got here. I mean, I don't really know much about what is going on politically here in the UK because my eyes are always focused on the States because what goes on with you guys is going
right.
to the domino right. effect. You are God's chosen, you know, you are one nation under God. You've got this contract, whatever, with God. And it's all going to start with America. Because if America goes, and God's, I don't, it's not over. America, I will not fall. God will not let that happen. But you've this Ukraine nonsense that's still, I mean, I can't believe we've still got people around near where I live with flags out and ribbons around their gates. I mean, it's the child trafficking hub of the Northern Hemisphere. Money laundering. I do believe there was a Wuhan lab, wasn't there, near, you know, in a town, they were saying. How's America dealing with the Ukraine? And do they believe that Ukraine needs more money? Because obviously Biden and Starmer were in talks whether to give them long-range missiles, winding Putin up, and said if that happens, you know, they're taking it upon themselves. And here we are, a tiny little island, playing games with Putin, who all he wanted was us, NATO, and everyone to stay away from his borders. He doesn't want them. He's already called them all out as paedophiles and Satanists.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I think Ukraine, there's a guy who was an actor, off his head on coke most of the time. You know, you've got actors going over to visit. I remember when it all started, and I didn't believe it at first. I did not believe there was anything going on in Ukraine, because you had Sean Penn going over. He was the first celebrity to go over there to do filming. And it's like, this isn't real. So how's America dealing with money, your money, going to Ukraine, as well as illegal immigration?
Well, I think people have been naive of not, again, understanding what Ukraine is really about. I pray that what really has been going on with the Ukraine war has been a military operation to clean it out under the guise of war. Okay, that's, again, my gut or my maybe wishful thinking, but I feel like you can make an argument to say that's the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
The White Hats are cleaning out things. I remember back in 2011, I lived in Germany for a time, and I read the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo book series. I don't know if you've read those, Stieg Larsson.
I think I read the first one.
Yeah, you should, if you have time, read the trilogy. Because it was interesting from being over in Europe, reading that series, you know, back in the day when your phones didn't work over in Europe. So you had to get a little handy at Aldi and have a SIM card over there. But so you'd bring a book on the trains, right? And just read. And so I made it through the trilogy there on the trains. And thought it interesting because it talks about a lot of the sex trafficking and evils that, like the post-Nazi, that they weren't defeated, they just went underground within Eastern Europe and Western Europe. And so that kind of put Eastern Europe on my radar. So when Ukraine came out with, you know, the bio labs and the trafficking and organ trafficking, that was a hub of Eastern Europe where all of that was occurring, it made sense to me. And so when the white, you know, under the guise, if you believe, putting my conspiracy hat on now, of, you know, the operation, the White Hats, Trump was part of the military plan, laws and orders, to clean up the country that he went around and
we've been doing shows on it since 2018.
Right. The capitulation tour, getting these other countries in line. Then it makes sense that they're cleaning out Ukraine. You can also see why the deep state, in quotations, or, you know, the evil uniparty are trying to make Ukraine such a big thing, because it's all a big money laundering operation. for the politicians and the NGOs. I mean, we showed at the 1A Film Fest, this is treason, trafficked, and it's the, you know, the case that J.J. Carroll, who's a retired border agent, and Ryan Matta, the filmmaker, clearly makes, substantiated by their documentation, is that the United States is the largest trafficker, yes, human trafficker on the globe.
Yeah.
Keeping these NGOs and the open borders as a well-oiled operation for money and blackmail and harvesting and sex trafficking and organ harvesting and all of it.
Yeah. Talking about the white hats in control, and, you know, it's almost like we're watching like a movie play out. I keep bringing up the British royal family, because when Trump went on his tour, he went to the Middle East and he came to the UK and then kind of finished with Russia, with Putin handing him the ball, saying the ball's in your court. Well, before that, he came to the UK and nobody ever walks in front of the Queen. Nobody. And she stood back and let Trump walk in front of her.
Waved him forward.
While they're doing the... Then he went to Saudi Arabia. They handed him the victor's sword. Then we had Russia, you know, Putin handing him the ball's in your court. Then we suddenly had Prince Philip, the Queen's husband, who looked like he'd just been dug up anyway, but die. Never in royal history has the head of the royal family not led a funeral procession. Prince Philip was taken to his final resting place in an old Land Rover. And the Queen travelled in the back of the brigade in a car. Right? I'm sorry. That doesn't... And they tried saying it was one that he restored during the war. Shut up, was it? And then we have Prince William and Kate living in a four-bedroom cottage on the grounds of Windsor Castle. The future heir, with all the palaces, they're living in a four-bedroom cottage. What's going on?
That's interesting.
And then Kate Middleton disappear for how many months? And I started the hashtag Where's Kate? Because we did a show about January the 17th, it was. And I said, no one's seen Kate Middleton. No visits, nothing. Then she was bungled out of the hospital without, again, royal protocol, thanking the staff that they do and the photos. None of that. She was bungled away in a van. I phoned the local papers and asked them, had they ever seen Kate Middleton there? Did they not find it funny that there was no visit from any of her family, her children, in the entire time that she was there? Doesn't anyone find that a bit odd? So I do believe the royal family are finished as well. This is the destruction of the deep state. The people are seeing it play out. They're seeing the evil that's going on. And have you noticed every person who's been going up and endorsing Kamala is on the Diddy freak-off list?
Or the Epstein, or the... Yeah, so, you know, that if you have... Again, eyes to see, and you're paying attention. You're not just looking at isolated dots, but you're able to look at them instead as pieces of the puzzle being put together. Then you're getting the whole picture.
Yeah.
Right? They're not dots in a constellation where you could draw any number of things from those isolated dots. Rather, they're pieces of the puzzle that once you put them in place, you have the big picture.
Yeah. I mean, this what goes on now with the white hats, it's going to affect every single person in the world, here especially. I mean, the Five Eyes and the spying that the UK did under Theresa May is absolutely shocking. The UK were absolutely, totally embedded with the steel dossier and the following, completely involved. So I'm just praying that Trump knows how much support he's now got in this country. It used to be a lonely road for me. But now I'm getting like fist pumped if I got my t-shirt on, my fight back t-shirt, or I'm wearing my MAGA hat. So yeah, it's
Well, and I
what a
felt
time
back
to
in
be alive.
2015, 2016, when he went around to the world leaders, not only, not understanding at the time, maybe looking at 2020, only more sure of what, but it was always said, America, the light on the hill, or as America goes, so goes the world, or we're the last
Absolutely.
stand for freedom for the rest of the world. Whether those things are even more true today, I felt like Trump was going around to the other leaders too to restore. When Trump started talking about build the wall back in 2015, before we even knew, how out of control the border was or would be, or what all was going on at the border, I said to people, I think he's using the wall as a literal concrete, pun intended, example of what was happening to the United States as a country. Our sovereignty was being eroded and intentionally destroyed by the globalists so that America would not be able to stand as that bastion of freedom, as that example of individual liberty. And when I lived in Germany, my German friends would say, "You're not free in America. We're more free here than you are." And I'd be like, "Wait a minute, what?" And then you look at it, and you began to see that was true, because government had become so pervasive under the guise of safety, had taken more and more rights, right? Especially since 9/11. And so I felt like when Trump talked about the wall, it was to give people something literal that they could wrap their brains around of what he meant and what he was saying. So I think that some of those, and now people have a better understanding of everything that he was talking about back in 2015, 2016. It's only
No, he's
more
been
true
right about
now.
everything. He's been right about everything. The one thing that hasn't, he was convinced. I mean, they may still do it, pack the court. But they would have done it by now, wouldn't they, if they were going to go down that route?
Yeah.
So talk about Film Fest. What's it all about? Can us over
Well,
here in the UK get involved? Tell us all about it.
the great thing about our small world is that of www, right? You can log on, and even though you're in the UK, you can still watch our 1A Film Fest. So if your audience wants to go to, and they should, I'd strongly encourage it to go to 1afilmfest.com, pre-order your post-production package. We are in the process of putting that together. A few years ago, because I had volunteered at different film festivals in my past, I've written some screenplays. I took screenwriting in college. Love the power of films. Worked as marketing PR person for an independent documentary, and so that was kind of in my wheelhouse. And a couple of years ago, I just had the idea, we need to do a 1A Film Fest, First Amendment Film Fest. And partly because I was getting kicked off of Twitter, they took down my YouTube. I think I'm in the top 1,000 of Twitter accounts that were censored over the last, 9 years.
You had a really, really big following, didn't you? I never got mine back. Did you ever get yours back?
No, not nearly to the degree. And I'm actually writing about that in my first chapter of Pardon of Innocence books. That will be coming out in 2025. So you can stay tuned for that. I'll come back on your show when I can
Yeah,
reference it.
absolutely.
Yeah. But talking about the censorship piece. So, what's First Amendment Film Festival seemed a way, there were all these independent filmmakers on our side coming out with great content, the power of film to be able to show and impact you. And I love that film is both personal and private, right? You watch it in community, you're gathered together in a theater or in, the comfort of your home as community, and yet it's an individual experience. It's very personal. You're watching it. Your own mind is engaging and feeling and thinking. And one of the things I learned in script writing was that when you write film, you have to, or, you know, movie, video medium, is you can only show, so you only have sense of sight and sound, right? So if someone's, you can't get inside their head like you can with fiction, describing a character, their thoughts, whatever. You have to show it. So if someone's nervous, then you show that by, like, they tapped on the table, right? So you get that nervous behavior to show the internal anxiety of the character. So I love, and that's a little geeky there, but I loved the medium in terms of being able to impact a person's thought, challenge their beliefs, give them new ideas. Every good film will make you laugh, make you cry, make you mad, make you happy. All of those things are elements within any good production. And so I had the idea for the 1A Film Festival that you run I had volunteered for a number of years out at Santa Barbara. They run a really great film festival in terms of you get your program, you have all the slate of films, you pick out your movies you want to go to. They had, you know, director forums, panel discussion, all part of the film festival in a great location. And so I had this idea. I got the 1A Film Fest. I had designed a little logo that was very cutesy, you know, bicentennial looking. And I had talked to David about it. I said, we really need to do a film festival, because by then he had done Writing History. And then, which led to J6, A True Timeline, Bloody Hill, all that. And I said, we really need to do this for our side. And so finally, David said, the timing's right. We put together a weekend down in Greenville, Texas, at the Texan Theater. So very iconic, great place, you know, symbolism of Texas, of the Lone Star State and freedom. Our First Amendment is, you know, what supports our Second Amendment. The two go hand in hand. And so I'm putting just a great team, David, Robert and Jamie and Robert, Aggie, Andrew Mullenix, talented filmmaker, did Bloody Hill with David Summerall. Great team. And we had a whole weekend of a film festival. It was a VIP because the Texas Theater only holds X number of people. It's a dinner theater set up perfect. It was beautiful. Robert and Jamie made sure we had all the swag for marketing, and had invited some filmmakers. Of course, we were going to feature David's J6, A True Timeline, which Tucker Carlson, when he interviewed David, said J6, A True Timeline is a film that everyone in America needs to see. And I would extend that to the UK as well. And of course, I worked closely with David over these years. We wrote the first article on January 27, 2022, about the 5 deaths of January 6th, with the video evidence from Taylor Hansen being next to Ashley Babbitt when she was shot, Philip Anderson being next to Roseanne Boylan when she was murdered, all of that. So very involved in it. So we knew the J6 piece. I've worked with Suzanne Monk on the J6 Pardon Project, as I mentioned previously. And then as word got out that we were going to put this film fest together, other filmmakers wanted in. So we ended up having, I knew J.J. Carroll. I had interviewed him several times on my show, introduced to him a number of years ago as a, you know, border agent. And so I knew J.J. had his film he was coming out with, and I had asked him to be a guest on my show. And then I said, well, he said, when the timing, and I said, well, maybe we can have you premiere your film at the 1A Film Fest. And so that motivated Ryan, his film partner, to finish up in time for the film fest. And then David got Mickey Willis with the Plandemic series. I mean, these are top line filmmakers. Professor David Clements with Let My People Go about the election steal. Professor David Clements has been instrumental in the J6 Mail project, really advocating for the J6ers. So that was one of our films. We ended up with a total of 12 films. Mark Sutherland, our friend from your backyard, We had his two short films to kind of break up the tempo and pace and introduce some fiction films, you know, that are certainly fit with the theme of the weekend. And then Mike Smith, who is the Hollywood stunt guy who turned filmmaker, did Out of the Shadows, which went global.
Hollywood.
And then so his sequel, Into the Light, we showed that Sunday, Bloody Hill, Writing History. Chris Burgard, who was again out of Hollywood, tour duty back in the day, that film, that TV show, independent filmmaker. His War on Truth, we showed that Saturday night. That's about the January 6th. And then Adam Riva, who did The Crucible of Donald Trump, we wrapped up the weekend with his film showing, you know, 70%, he said, is the mainstream media of their attacks on Donald Trump. So we ended up with just an incredible slate of movies that we showed. Started Friday night through Sunday. Everything beautifully packed. We had filmmaker panel discussion. We had awards, the first annual 1A Film Fest Awards. My vision for it is that the 1A Film Fest will become the Cannes, as you're familiar with in your backyard down in France, or the Sundance, you know, is probably the most known in the United States film festival. That we're 1A Film Fest becomes that for the mega movement, the conservative, the truth films, the independent. I've said over the past that independent media podcasts like yours, broadcast, those are to the mainstream media that independent filmmakers are to Hollywood. They're both have taken those two traditionally very gatekept, very controlled mediums of communication, and now everybody has access, right? You can put together a great film, put it out there, and people can see your work. You no longer have to beg an agent, pay through the nose to try and get your script made into a film. You no longer have to, you know, work your way through the casting couch to be able to get a job on a new show. You can just do your thing, right? Which is awesome. And so that was the motivation behind the 1A Film Fest. And then back to my little logo that I had designed when I, you know, David and I started working more towards making it come to fruition. He's like, well, we're going to just tweak the logo a little bit. And I'm like, oh, I like my logo. And fortunately.
You have to send it over to me. I want to see it.
Oh, I will. They overruled me on the logo because here, I'll send it to you. Maybe you can put it up on or you can take a look at it. Because what they came up with was he and Andrew. It's phenomenal. I'll email this to you.
Yeah, do. Yeah. I'll include it on the post.
And the metaphor is that just like the guns are to our Second Amendment, the movie camera. And let me also add the video, promo video clip that Andrew and David did, which is phenomenal. I'm gonna see if I can add that in there. Insert. Because, so they made it look like the movie camera actually looks like AR-15, I think, is the correct gun. But it's so cool. All right, I just sent it to you. So give it a
I'll include
minute.
It in the post.
So they call it our Armory of Truth. And each of the films, and the reason we packaged our mission was ahead of the 2024 election. So we started Friday night with the This Is Treason premiere, world premiere. Here's where we are at now with this border crisis after 4 years of the Biden-Harris administration. And then Saturday morning, we did the go back through COVID, what that the pandemic did to the world. That was the setup for the 2020 election steal. And then January 6th, so that the, you know, they say the cover-up is worse than the crime. the crime of the election steal was covered up by January 6th, and then where we are now. And so every film was a piece of the puzzle to give that whole picture so people could realize where we've been. You know, the world lockdown, the global pandemic, plandemic was so surreal. And now we're almost like so far away from it, even though it was just a few short years ago. People, it's like you have to stop and think a minute, like, oh yeah, it was so weird.
Oh, but we've still got people here going out in masks, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you look at them and think,
I just get triggered. I was getting, because I never put one on my face once. Not once did one go near my face. No stick up my nose. Do you know what I mean? Nothing. And it would trigger me. You'd have people cycling and they're wearing a mask outside on a country bike ride.
Right. Right. And that was all because of the fear that they instilled in people.
Exactly. It's crazy. I mean, here in the UK, people were standing on their front doorsteps on a Wednesday night, clapping for the NHS. So, have you voted? Have you got in and voted, or are you going on the day?
I went out. So I voted early, banked my vote, and we'll see, you know, what happens.
What I was hoping, just to whoever can, because obviously I'm having guests on every day from over there, I was hoping that maybe the following day, if everyone's got a chance, we could do all of us on a group call.
That would be fun.
Just, you know, to the aftermath as such. I mean, we probably won't get the results the same day, but who knows? Maybe we have a brief discussion where... Let's see, but that's what I thought would be good.
Well, the post-election, right. So the fear is that people are going to be, the left is not going to accept it still, because if you remember back to 2016 and the burning cars and the burning down things and the riots that ensued after that, you know, I think there was probably some intentional creating that kind of crisis and making it seem like
a normal reaction,
so they could set the trap for the J6ers, right?
Absolutely. 1 million. Where can people follow you?
Well, I still have a Rumble channel, but I mostly just do special shows occasionally now, because I'm supposed to be focusing on writing my book.
Your social media? Are you on
I'm on Truth Social at Tamara Lee, and back on X at Tamara Lee LLC, and then on Rumble. So J6 Part Project, we're hoping to see that through. But yeah, those are my socials, and then articles at stophate.com. David, Tim and I with American Gulag Chronicles, we're now on Redacted Media, so we'll be launching that and doing a little bit more there. But
fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll all have a catch up on the 6th of November.
Yeah, we'll see how the world turns, huh?
Thank you so much, Tamara Lee.
God
bless you.
Thank you to your audience too. Lots of prayers.
God bless.
Bye.
Thank you so much. So that's it, libertytactics.co.uk. If you feel led to, buy us a coffee, we'd very much appreciate it. We're going to try and go with StreamYard. We're going to see how that works out. See if we can start going and doing more live shows. Check us out on TikTok. Jason Noter's running that. Liberty Tactics. We're on Facebook and all the other social medias. Check out Catherine's website, exposingthelie.info, and obviously publicchildprotectionwise.org. That's it. We'll be back tomorrow. Good night.